What's up, everybody? Welcome to a Friday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. John Harris alongside the voice of the Texans, Mark Vandermeer. Hopefully you're having a beautiful Friday as we are 1 week away from the Texans making a pick in the NFL draft. They will be the second to last team to make a pick if they do indeed stay at pick number 42.
Ha.
Because there is that caveat that you always have to bring to the party. If they stay at 42, Mark, do you believe he's staying at 42?
No, more likely to happen not staying at 42.
Not staying at 42.
Come on. We're going to get there. Late Friday, we're going to start hypothesizing who Nick will target.
Yeah.
Because guys are going to drop. It always happens every year. Mm-hmm. And it pushes other guys down.
Yep.
Or whatever happens with the draft. So he's going to target somebody. You and I talked about this last night. We got the vibe that he's certainly open to jumping back into the first round if need be, or if he sees a player that he feels and the Texans feel can really help them this year. But early second round, Johnny, all day Friday, the speculation, all the guys on Sports Radio 610, who's Nick going to jump up and target here?
Yep.
Or who are you rooting for to fall to the Texans at 42? I don't see him staying there, but he might. And Sean was saying this morning, hey, if Nick stays, it's fine. Yeah, sure, 42 and 59, mm-hmm. great. Sounds good to me. But you know Nick, he's probably going to move at least one, if not both of those picks.
If I were Nick on Thursday night, I would just call all my buddies that are GMs, like Austin Fort.
Yeah.
He knows him. Adam Peters, I know he knows him. Like, just call those guys, like, when they're on the clock. And just say, hey, you want to trade your pick? Just to mess with them a little bit.
Nick, stop calling me. I'm working.
I know John Dorsey does that to Ballard every year. He calls him like when he's on the clock. And Ballard waits for it, and he gets it, and he's like, hi, John, and he hangs up on it.
Are you going to do it again this year? Are you going to watch draft day?
Oh, yeah.
Day of the draft?
Of course.
It's so bad, but it's so good. You know, the more I watch it, the more it's a great B-movie about the NFL.
Oh, totally.
And
that's the way you have to take it. You can't take it with this whole serious thought process. You just have to take it as it's a fun movie.
It's like doctors watching medical shows.
Right.
And it's not like that at all.
That term is totally made up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's
also what the draft, the months before the draft look like, but they boil it down into one day.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no way. I've always pointed this out. Costner's like, who has the number four pick?
Right, you know, right.
Really, Kevin? Enjoying Jennifer Garner much, are we?
What would be interesting to know is with Nick, because he mentioned some team and the number that they were picking. I wonder how deep they know.
Oh, if you could just quiz Nick. Who's
got pick 36?
Who's got 142?
Washington Commanders. Yeah, like how far can you go?
I know a decent
number of them. And I get to the middle of the second round and I start going, yeah, there was a lot of second round movement, a lot of second round changes. So speaking of trades, I saw this article today by Bill Barnwell. Now, I will preface this by saying that none of his trades included the Texans. So what he does every year is he goes the 32 first round picks and he makes a trade with every single pick.
Oh,
he
really?
Comes up with his own trade. He uses the Jimmy Johnson draft value chart and he comes up with a trade for every single pick. Well, there are no picks that impact the Texans directly, but there are some that impact the Texans indirectly because they happen in the AFC South.
Before you mention these, Bill Barnwell has a lot of time on his hands.
Yes,
if you can write an article like this and put in that kind of work and value, properly meaning the Jimmy Johnson chart, the picks, the trade value, that's incredible stuff. But he is compensated for his writing. So
yeah, this is his draft guide, basically, because there's a lot that goes into this. When you see it, there's not like pages and pages and pages of things written, but he's got a description for everyone. That in and of itself takes a while. But just figuring out who you're going to trade, what's going to be traded, very interesting. And that leads me to this, because the ones he has for the AFC South, in fact, the very first pick in the draft, he has the AFC South included. Now, again, this is from Bill Barnwell's. He does this every year, 32 picks, 32 trades. This is his annual thing.
He's got the Titans moving up to number one.
Wrong team.
What?
The Chicago Bears trade 1v1, the first pick in the draft to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You're kidding.
For Trevor Lawrence, a mid-second rounder and a fifth rounder. The Jaguars get one overall. Caleb Williams goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Bears get Trevor Lawrence, a mid-second, and a mid-fifth. Your gut reaction to what that trade, if that trade were to happen anytime before 7 o'clock Central Time Thursday, your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting because Trevor Lawrence, so-called generational quarterback, drafted in 2021, and now the Jags jettison him, according to Barnwell, his little hypothesis here, and the Jags get another so-called generational quarterback in Caleb Williams. Mm-hmm. That's why they're making this deal. So they're going to pass off on Lawrence and then go ahead and gamble on Williams.
Right.
I won't panic, Johnny, if the Jags go for Caleb Williams. But I know Lawrence right now, and I think Lawrence is a good quarterback. I just don't think he's a great quarterback.
Correct.
And I think they could, obviously, they've won a division with him, and they won 9 games last year, even though they had a meltdown. They could be very dangerous. We're going to talk a lot in the next few months about how dangerous can the Jaguars really be? Because everyone's acting like, oh, foregone conclusion, the Texans are going to win the AFC South and go right back through the divisional round. Hey, the Jags and Colts and even the Titans want something to say about that. Mm-hmm. I'll freak out probably. That would be a major move, and good for him for making that deal. But it's not out of the realm of rational thinking. You know what I mean? You
could see it
because it's contract time for Lawrence in many ways. And I talked about this, and you know what? We don't want to do it, so we're going to go ahead and get Caleb Williams.
So this is what he says.
The Bears will freak out. The fans in Chicago freak out.
Lose their minds. For the Jaguars, this is what Bill Barnwell says of ESPN. For the Jaguars, this would be recognizing that they've essentially wasted most of Lawrence's 3 bargain basement seasons as a starter. The disaster of the Urban Meyer season led to a desperate second offseason in which they spent over-the-top money to add Kirk, Zay Jones. Calvin Ridley wasn't able to live up to expectations, and they bowed out of the bidding for him this offseason after signing Gabe Davis. Middling offensive line play hasn't helped Lawrence stay healthy. Starting over with Williams, Caleb Williams, would give the Jags another chance to build around a quarterback with franchise passer upside while he's still cheap.
There's no way the Bears do it.
Well, this is what he finished with. Is either team even going to consider this trade for a second? Of course not. Will each team's fans hate it? Probably. I think fans of both teams will be blindingly enraged by this deal at equal levels, though. And while it'll never happen, that would be a sign that the trade is fair.
I can understand the Bears not wanting to pick Williams, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can understand this, that they would want a different quarterback, but you have the number one pick. Go ahead and pick a different quarterback at this point. And Trevor Lawrence, I think he could be solid in a city like Chicago. Look, Chicago has some things to work with. We all know that. They won 7 games last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chicago.
7 games.
Chicago. 7 games last year. Chicago Bears.
Yep.
And they get draft capital. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know, just seeing Jacksonville with number one overall, it's Caleb, like,
Look, I disagree with him to this extent. I know the Jags didn't win a Super Bowl yet with Trevor Lawrence. I'm not saying they will, but look, they still have him. Mm-hmm. But they won a division. They went to the divisional round. Last year, woulda, coulda, shoulda. They had a meltdown. We all know it.
Yep.
But they still ended up with a winning season. Last time they had back-to-back winning seasons. Last time was a long time ago.
Long time ago.
So, you know, they are in a decent era right now. I know there's a lot of hand-wringing there, but we'll see.
Okay.
What's the next one?
AFC South picking at number 7. So I know these teams in order. Number 7, the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
Tennessee Titans deal.
According
to Bill
Barnwell.
They trade with the Cardinals. The Cardinals are at number 4.
Yeah.
So the Cardinals get Tennessee's pick at 7. They get a early second rounder and wide receiver Treylon Burks. The Titans get pick number 4 overall. And they also get a third rounder. That presumably means, because you're trading Burks, that they're going up to 4 to get
Marvin Harrison.
Marvin Harrison Jr. as a Titan. Your reaction.
Is Malik Davis getting drafted first?
That's a great question. I think the teams that need receivers, I bet if you went to every team, I bet their top 3, how they organize their top 3 is totally different.
Interesting.
I bet they all are.
There's no way the Cardinals do this, right? They have to give up a third also?
Yeah.
To do this, according to Barnwell?
Yeah.
He's using that chart way too religiously.
Yeah, he's sticking to the chart.
Because on draft night, you make a deal like this. This is when the extra phone call or the I'm waiting moment, the negotiating moments are played out. Well, when we go back to the Deshaun Watson deal, Rick Smith and who was it? Sashi at the time, right?
Sashi Brown.
Didn't he ask for more in the last moment?
Right.
Reportedly.
Right,
and
right,
Rick
right.
said, come on, we already come talked on,
we
about this.
Yep.
But he's trying to get that sweetener. Didn't Gannon, or rather Osenfort, ask for more last year from Nick or something like that?
There's video of Osenfort. I can't remember. No, it was with Detroit. With Osenfort with Detroit.
Oh.
That was, they were asking for a little bit more. And
but anyway, these things happen.
Right. Exactly. You agree to something, and then, let's try and get a sweetener.
Why would the Cardinals move out of that pick and pick up Burks? For an extra second rounder? Whoop-de-freaking-do.
Yeah. And they have to give up a third rounder, too.
Forget about it. That's not a good trade.
No.
They're going to hang in there. If they wanted a receiver, Burks? No.
No. The thing is, the Cardinals could go to 7 and get another receiver. As well, they could get one of those three. The thought,
I'd rather have some draft capital or Jeffrey Simmons or something.
Yeah, exactly. He hypothesizes that they will get a tackle at number 4, trying to get ahead of the Chargers. I think all this Jim Harbaugh talking about tackles is a smokescreen. I think it's a total smokescreen. I do think they're going to draft an lineman. They can't go into the season with what they've got at wide receiver. They can't. So I think the Chargers think wide receiver. Either way, okay. The most active team that Bill Barnwell has on here is the Indianapolis Colts.
Ooh.
So here's the first deal. Pick number 11 is the Minnesota Vikings. He has the Colts moving up from 15 to 11, and it costs the Colts a third rounder, pick number 82 overall. So the Colts get to number 11, presumably to draft a wide receiver, one of the three falls, or Georgia tight end Brock Bowers in Indianapolis.
No way the Vikings do this. A third?
Yeah.
To move up from 15 to 11 costs more than a third. I don't care what the chart said. It's draft night. I'm getting a 2 minimum for that if I'm the Vikings and I'm dropping down from 11 to 15. So no way does it happen. I don't want to see the Colts get Brock Bowers, by the way.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Do not want to
I do not want
happen.
That to happen at all.
Yeah.
I do not want that to happen. Now, it could also mean the Colts are going up to 11 to make sure they get their top corner if they want to get a corner. I think they're going to get a good corner of 15. They could just sit there. But again, he's trying to make a trade for every pick.
But Barnwell knows this.
Yeah.
We're all waiting on the Vikings to package their 2 first rounders to move up and take a quarterback.
That's correct.
The move that's going to be made here.
Yeah. You would think that is the one that's going to be made.
Yeah, they want to move up and do some business with the Chargers. Maybe if I'm the Chargers, I definitely entertain that. Or the Cardinals, if they are, in fact, devoted to Kyler Murray at this stage.
Yeah. He's also got another one of the Colts trading down with the Green Bay Packers. This is actually the one, similar one that I put in my 2-round mock. I had the Colts moving down with the Cardinals. I had the Cardinals trading with the Vikings.
Yeah.
So then the Cardinals picked up pick number 23, which is our pick.
Yeah.
Then they've also got our pick at 27. So at 23 and 27, the Cardinals then traded back up with the Colts. The Colts then moved down. So this is very similar to the trade that I came up with, but it's with the Packers, not the Colts. But he has the Colts being kind of the most...
they're trading down to the 25th pick where the Green Bay Packers are selecting?
Yes. They'd and be at the 25 and 28 in the first round.
Whoa. So who are the Colts selecting at 25?
Again, looking at corner and potentially wide receiver.
All right.
That would and the thing is, their wide receivers, I mean, their wide receivers are fine, but they're just fine. You know? There's not a lot of sexy.
How do you feel in Indy right now? Richardson's coming back. They're very happy that he knows the offense.
Yeah.
But he missed a ton of time. He seems healthy. How are they really feeling about this? They're behind schedule with Richardson because of the injury, and they see what happened with Stroud. And, yeah, they were right in it with the Texans at the end there, but it was Gardner Minshew, and Joe Flacco is there now. This is going to be really interesting. It always is, no matter what happens.
Well, it feels almost like one of those – it feels like an 800-meter race where, like, for the first 400 meters, you're pretty close.
Yeah.
But then now what's happened this offseason, do you feel like maybe one is going to pull away from the other ones? I kind of hope that's the case.
Yeah,
I hope that's what happens and that's the Texans pulling away from them. But I know that's got to be part of it. I know, you heard Pat McAfee the day the Diggs trade went down. Yeah. I mean, he was feeling like, holy crap, look what they've just done. They were supposed to be a dumpster fire, and now they might be the belle of the ball.
I don't know if they really know who Richardson really is.
I agree.
What is his style? I know he runs the ball well. He can make some throws, but who is he?
Right.
The Texans know what they have with C.J. Stroud.
Correct.
That's why they could load up in certain areas. And obviously the defense, you know what that is. So they added appropriately. If you're the Colts on offense, how do you add appropriately? They still have Jonathan Taylor. He's pretty freaking good. So they could move the ball in one way or another.
I'm going to give you one last trade that he came up with.
All right.
And it doesn't include any. It includes one team the Texans play this year. I don't see this happening at all, but boy, it would be interesting. The Vikings move up to pick number 3 overall, which right now is occupied by the New England Patriots. In return, the Patriots get pick number 23 overall and wide receiver Justin Jefferson.
Wait. They're using the 23rd pick to move up, not the 11th.
Not the 11th. The Vikings get number 3 overall. The Patriots get Justin Jefferson and number 23 overall.
Yeah, but they're not going to get a quarterback at 23.
No, they're not going to get. They're going to have to rely on Jacoby Brissett.
But, you know, you could get Penix. What if they fell in love with Penix and they said, this is our guy. We're going to Penix and Justin Jefferson. I don't think Jefferson's going to like that move at all.
No. But with Penix, maybe. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, he's got to see it. It's a show.
But then
me
again,
thing.
He played with Kirk Cousins the last 3 or 4 years.
But Kirk's going to get you
solid.
The ball.
I know, Kirk's solid, but Brissett will get him the ball. Thing is, Addison would open things up for Jefferson this past year, but then Jefferson got hurt. Who's going to do that up in New England? No one. There's nobody up there that is even a good number 3 around Jefferson. So yeah. I don't know. But moving down, you're right. That actually is one thing I did. I had the Patriots moving back into the bottom. I had the Patriots taking a tackle and then trading back up to the back end of the first round to get Penix.
If I'm the Patriots,
exactly what I thought
keep
of.
Jefferson, give me 11 and something else, and I might entertain that.
I might entertain that.
In love with one of the top 3 guys.
But I think the Vikings have got to get to number 3. I think they got to get to number 3.
They have to get a quarterback?
Yes. I mean, I know there's been talk about them getting to 4, but then you're getting the 4th best of the 4 quarterbacks. At least if you get to number 3, there's a thought that, hey, maybe the Commanders take a guy we're not all that interested in. We get the 2nd best quarterback
on
our
board.
The
Patriots aren't making that deal.
I don't know the Patriots are going to do that.
They got to go for a quarterback. They got to sell tickets, too. Believe me, they're going to notice the wear and tear at the box office now.
No, that's true. That's very, very true. Very true. Also speaking truth, Andy Kalou and our guy, Robert Smith. Texans OGs coming up next. What's happening, everybody? Welcome back to this Friday edition of Texans All Access. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter for your Houston Texans. We are 1 week away from the draft, but I appreciate you being here with me on this All Access show brought to you by Mattress Firm, the official sleep partner of the Houston Texans. Spread the word. You can score bonus savings on better sleep during Mattress Firm's Friends and Family Sale. Hurry in to save up to $700 with your extra discount. Plus, get a free, you heard me, free adjustable base on select beds. All right, let's get to Texans OGs. That's Andy Kalou's University. He does such a great job. This week, former Texan, Michigan State Spartan, Robert Smith. Andy, take it away.
We never had a chance to be teammates in the regular season, but we ended up becoming neighbors. And for me, he's one of my best friends now. And the way he looks after my family, my kids, we're next door neighbors. But it's been a blessing to me in my post-career life. Robert Smith, I call him Robeezy. What's going on, Rob?
Hey, what's up, Andy?
Man.
Hey, man, just to let you know, man, I appreciate you, too, for always being there for my family, being a good, you know, one of my best friends. Always looking out for us, whether we around town, whether we ain't, my kids, whether they in school, whether I'm home or not. You know, I appreciate you and your family always looking out for them.
Man, feelings mutual. I'll tell you something that's funny, and if y'all ever want to start something, don't do it in Siena, because if there's a car that one of us don't know, we are texting or calling one another saying, hey, do you know this blue Honda in the front? Because if not, he about to get fired upon.
Yeah, so, man, I had to let some people in our neighborhood know, like, man, I know we've been there so long now. We know every car that come through, whether it's, you know, our people are our age, their kids' age, some of them even their kids' kids.
Yep.
You know, we've been there, so we know when a car or when someone don't belongs in it, which is a good thing.
It's
you
great.
Know, so
you feel safe. You feel safe
for sure.
All right, let's get into it. Flint, Michigan. Raised Flint, Michigan, molded you.
Yeah.
You and your brother played in the NFL, All American in high school before going to Michigan State. One thing I want to bring up, because I don't think people realize how odd it is when you look at the numbers. Less than 1% of the people trying to get into the NFL actually get into the NFL when you talk about from high school up there. And for your household to have two, right. You know, your older brother, Fernando Smith, played in the NFL. What was going on in that household for that to happen?
I mean, we had a lot of blessings from God, man. You know what I mean? Because, like you say, it's kind of really, the odds is very low. It's not only one going, but two, you know, and I like to tell people, don't forget, I got another brother that possibly could have played football, but he ended up playing basketball, had a quick stint in the NBA, but ended up going more overseas for the most part. But he made it to the NBA, you know, along with two girls' cousins of mine that made it to the WNBA at the time. So I think our family just been kind of blessed with that. And, you know, like I say, it was just a lot of blessings from God.
Well, when did it hit you? Like, because when you're going through it, you're still young. How old were you when Fernando first got into the NFL?
When he first got in the NFL was my ninth grade year in high school. So
you're
92.
Thinking, cool, my brother's in the NFL. But when does it hit you, like?
Or maybe I got a chance. Yeah. You know, the thing with me, I always grew up, I played every sport, you know, from soccer to football to basketball to, you know, anything I can go out in the neighborhood and play. I ended up playing with it at my school. But the thing I think that kind of led me more towards that is I always looked at my brother as a role model. Mm. So, you know, I think that started transforming me into really locking in and playing football, because I always really grew up thinking basketball, right. Basketball. Where I'm from is – it's a lot of good basketball players. I mean, we got good football players in the, you know, that was coming up that I looked up to, the Carl Banks, the, you know, Andre Rison, which I look at like a big brother, big Mark Ingram. Not little Mark Ingram right. That played in the NFL, but his dad. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a couple guys out of there, but it was also Glenn Rice, Jeff Greer. You know, it's a lot of old school players that came that was in the NBA at the time. So we was thinking NBA. But as I got older and started watching my brother mannerism, watching what he was doing, I started doing it. Then the one that finally hit me was, I think maybe like my ninth grade, 10th grade year, I went down to his football camp when he signed with the Minnesota Vikings. Mm-hmm. It was actually an offseason like now, and they had me just kind of being sort of like a little helper. You know, it was him, John Randall, mm-hmm. and Jerry Ball and all those guys. And, you know, once, I think that's the summer I kind of really grew love for football.
Nice. That's big time right there to be around that. And then when you're around them, are you thinking to yourself, you know what, in 8, 9, 10 years, I could be one of these guys.
I could do it. You know what I mean? Because I seen it. I seen it personally. I felt it. I experienced it. So that's something that I think a lot of kids, you know, just in the world in general, you know, not just from where I'm from, but from all over, once you can really feel it and see it and touch it and see it, that's a goal for you to shoot for. Like, my main reason was, after then, I remember coming back and I seen Andre Rison in a candy apple red Ferrari. I said, oh man, I gotta get me one of that. I don't know if I can fit in it, right. But I need one. Yep. You know what I mean? So that kind of, you know, drove me, and you know, a part of that was driving me too. But once, like you said, once I seen them guys doing it, and then I started working on some of the stuff they doing, even though I didn't know what I was doing. I'm like, I could do this. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then the little stuff they showed me over that summer, I took it back into my 10th grade season in high school, and it just worked. So nice. I'm like, okay, I got a chance.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Man, it's kind of corny. Like, you know, when I was young, I was a football nerd. Like, I played all the other sports, but I loved football. I literally would cut pictures of every player, even if I didn't know who it was, out of Sports Illustrated and put it on my wall. But I knew very well who your brother was, because I also played defensive end.
Okay.
So, you know, I knew exactly who he was, John Randall. And then when I met you, I put it together. I was like, oh, that's his younger brother.
And it was just kind of cool. Right,
but
there.
Yeah, like, I didn't just know who he was. Like, I would watch him and try to mimic his movements, because that's just what I did. So you get back and you're using those movements your 10th grade year, and you're starting to see that it works. When is it time to start thinking about, okay, what university do I want to choose?
You know what? I was still scrattering the fence, because I've always been, I like to say, pretty decent at basketball. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some might argue I was, some might argue I was better than what I thought. You know what I mean? But I didn't really, really, really make the decision to start playing football to really my senior year in high school. Mm. Like I say, I always straddled the fence. Okay. You know what I mean? Even to the point where I told Coach Saban, okay, if I come to Michigan State, can I still play basketball? Mm-hmm. And of course, he's going to tell you, yeah, he's going to tell you whatever you want to hear until you get there. You know, and it was good that I was seeing Coach Izzo coming to my school for my brother, Antonio, which is a year older than me, and my best friend, Mateen. So it's like, okay, yeah, you could play. But I didn't ever take it as I really could because they was like, yeah, all right, yeah, you can play if you want to, yeah. but it was like, you know, you're not right. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was cool. You know, so my senior year, I think that's when I decided, like, okay, football is my thing.
All right, so you played basketball at a high level. You had a brother go to the NBA, a brother go to the NFL. In your opinion, what's tougher?
I would say you got to really – both of them got – it's tough. Mm-hmm. You know, don't get me wrong, because basketball, you got to be a gym rat.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? You got to be in there every day. You got to put up the 500,000 shots, dribble, do this, do that, just consistently. But football is a game that you got to truly love because it's so much demand on your body, physically, mentally, you know, emotionally. Mm-hmm. You're away from your family longer, I think, at times because, you know, you ain't here whether you practicing, whether you watching film, whether you getting treatment, whether you lifting weights. Like, you got to do all those things. Like repeatedly, like 2 and 3 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, that's on the lower end, you know. So I think it's much more demanding to be a football player. And I think, like I say, it's just a lot more work goes into it, if you ask me.
I feel like football is more of a grind or basketball is more of a skill set. But for sure. I mean, like you said, it's tougher, but they're both very tough. You know, when I was at Rice, and this is, you know, small Division I school, we would play pickup basketball with the basketball players. That's when it hit me. I thought I was a good basketball player coming out of high school. Hey. But when I played pickup with them, I'm like, I'm not good at all because they would make shots. If they were uncontested, they would make shots like just layups.
Easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why, I you know, when people, you know, they got to be mindful when they be watching these basketball and football games. They be, oh, this basketball player, he's the 13th or the 12th person off the bench. But that 12th person on a regular person would give you 50 to 60 points real easy. Appreciate. You know, it takes a lot. But those guys are really good. Mm-hmm. I think that's about what you said was probably my come to Jesus moment also in college. It was in the summertime, and I think it was our freshman year, maybe my sophomore, and it was a couple of us on a football team. We used to always go and watch the basketball team practice in the summer because we all was cool.
Right.
Man, and then one day we gets out there, we trying to scrimmage these dudes. Yeah. We talking crazy. So they like, come on. You know, it went real quick from a full court game to a half court game to, man, people just laying on top of each other to, okay, we got to turn this into football.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard fouls, no
yeah,
blood, no
exactly.
Foul.
You know, so I think, like you said, those guys is a different thing, and they be very good, very talented. And they does stuff with ease. But, you know, go back to what we're saying, that's all the time they put in the gym on them shots, them, you know, dribbling, shooting 1,000 times a day, you know, 300 from this spot, 300. I mean, it's almost like they ain't got to look at the rim and shoot it and make it.
Like literally 1,000
shots. Yeah. Yep. And it was crazy, like, that you say that, because I was just down in Phoenix, and I was watching those guys warm up before the game. Like,
the Suns?
Yeah, the Phoenix Suns. Because a good friend of mine that went to school with us named Matt Ishbel just bought the Suns. So we was going down there just watching them. And
Hold on. Is that a humble brag?
No, man, that's just a homeboy.
My homeboys are buying new shoes. Hey. Your homeboys are buying NBA basketball teams. Hey, but go ahead, my bad.
I got to tell you why I'm just an automatic Suns fan at all times. So if anybody, you ain't even got to ask me, my favorite team is the Suns. You know what I mean? You know, that's how we roll. Hey, but I was watching those guys. They come out there maybe like an hour and a half, 2 hours before the game,
mm-hmm.
and they work out.
Before the game?
Before the game. Like, everything that you see during the game, they done worked out and did that maybe an hour and a half to like an hour and 15 minutes before the game.
Okay.
Like, they come out there one at a time, and they all be with a trainer, and they actually go through every shot they do. And some of the stuff they was doing was, I'm like, okay, why are you doing that? But then you see it happening in the game, like, oh, okay, I see it now. Like, it was points when they were shooting three-pointers, they ain't bending no elbows. All they doing is catching ball, flicking the wrist.
Okay.
And I'm like, damn, how did he do that? Why is he doing that in warm-up? Then I see him doing in the game. I'm like, man, this look, it make you respect basketball totally different. The grind is different.
Speaking of respecting, I have two basketball questions before we start talking Texans. Speaking of respecting basketball a little more, did you have a chance to watch any of the women's tournament?
Oh, man, I watched it all. You know me.
I kept hearing about Caitlin Clark. But after seeing it, I was like, okay, she's the truth.
Oh, man, yeah. I don't know why they hating on Caitlin Clark so much. That girl, she's good. If you look at her, I'm not saying that she's Steph Curry, but it's the same comparison when you're doing like, would she ever be able to do this? Even when Taurasi, I think, went on her podcast or something and said she's going to have a humble experience when she comes to the WNBA because she's not playing with 18-year-olds. She's playing with grown women.
Okay.
Well, you can look at that either way because – everybody had that humble experience, right. But do I think she can get over the hump? Yeah, I think she's a once in a generation type player as of right now. Now, would she be able to have the volume to shoot it as she did in college and, you know, the lead way? We'll wait and see. I don't see why she wouldn't, but she's good. And it's a lot of girls in there that I feel like was good. I'm just a basketball head. Like you, football, I love basketball.
No, I've known that. Yeah. You've always been bad. Me, as a matter of fact, we had a chance to coach basketball together. You know a lot about basketball. When I heard about her, and I kept hearing her name, this is going back to last year, and I knew she was good, but this year I said, okay, let me put my phone away and just watch. And I don't know if I just picked the right game, but by the end of the game, my eyes were wide. My hands were in my palms. Like, this girl's amazing.
That was every game. That's her style of play. Mm-hmm. I think when did you watch her more? In the finals? In the playoffs?
The final two games.
Yeah, like, them was some of her toughest games. Like, you know, like, that she did all year, but she stepped up to the moment. Mm-hmm. She showed out in the moment against the good players.
Yeah.
Because you look at the girl Reese and, you know, some of the guys that was – I mean, some of the girls – I said guys like I'm watching the boys. But, yeah, some of the girls that were checking her, the South Carolina, you know, they've been very good lately. And Don Staley, them, they know their thing. And, you know, Markey from LSU, and she made it. It was tough, second quarter. Next thing you know, she get the roll, and she made it start looking a little easy.
Yeah.
Like, man, but this is the best that she can go against, and I don't think too much has changed. It might even help that she's going to the WNBA, just like some college basketball players fit more of an NBA style than college. That's why I think Bronny got to test that water.
Mm.
You know, I don't mean to jump shift, but he got to test that water because I think he would be a better pro than he is a college player.
How cool would that be? You have two boys. My nephews who are studs, like they're freaks. But can you imagine being able to actually play with them?
Oh,
not
man.
Just coach them up to actually play with them.
I think I would love it. I don't know if they will. They'll be like, man, I don't want to play with my daddy. He watching my every move, and I can't talk like I want to talk. But I think that's, you know, that'll be something that's like be terrific. I think it'll be a dream of any athlete to play with they child on. You know, I don't care what sport or what level. But I just think that's something that'll be very fun to do. You know, how long, like I say, how long would it last? I don't know.
It's more likely to happen in baseball and basketball than obviously football.
Yeah, for sure.
Frank Gore almost did it.
He did it. I really think he could have if he really wanted to.
If he wanted to and said, you know what, I'll be a third down back or, you know, you're right. I actually didn't think about
that. Yeah, I think he really could.
He probably could. Knowing that, shoot, I would have busted some nuts early in my age, like at 15, 16, knowing that could have been a possibility.
It could have been a possibility because you got to think about it. We was playing football. It was some kids some guys that we was playing with, their kids was running around the field.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I like to, you know, not to do Bruce, but Bruce Matthews. I remember Jake and all those guys was babies when we played at Tennessee. And I look at them now, I be telling them every time I see them up the plex working out, like, man, I remember you was still in diapers running around that little – you know, around the facility at Bruce, and look at y'all, man. Like, you finna retire. You a stud. You know what I mean, an all pro and all this. Like, man, this is crazy. I mean, it makes me feel old at the same time, but it's cool to see. And I wish that could have been me.
Right.
You know, and that's something I discussed with my wife. Like, I wish, you know, I would have had my sons earlier so they can be at practice with me, come out there and work out with me. And like you said, hopefully we could have did something together, you know.
Yeah, while we could still move around.
Yeah, maybe I could have had one good friend as a coach and be like, man, let me just play. I don't even need to bring my helmet out the locker room. Just let me play with my son for one week.
Exactly. That would have been fun.
Yeah.
Speaking with Robert Smith, OG Podcast. All right, let's switch gears and talk about the excitement going on here in Houston with D'Amico Ryans. Obviously, the McNairs have done an awesome job kind of turning everything around. Just 2 years ago, people outside of Houston were laughing at the Texans, and now people are talking contenders. Is it too early to talk contenders right now?
I mean, if you want to be humble, yeah. But at the same time, you gotta have that confidence. Like, it's true. That's how you want to come into a off season. You want that mindset. Like, it's time to shine.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I felt like they set the standard last year. You know, if you're looking at it from a team aspect, they set the standard of where they want to be or what they want to do. And I think they got better this offseason, yep. You know, at a couple different positions. So I think it's a reasonable goal to have for sure. Like, I hope that's how one would think. Like, it's time for us to go out there and contend and compete and win this thing. Because that's at the end of the day, you know, that's the goal.
You want the players to think it. I guess people get a little weary when they say it. I'm okay if a player's confident as long as you back it up.
For sure. You know what I mean? I don't want to play with nobody that's doubting themselves. You know what I mean? Like, we finna lose. No, we ain't finna lose. I don't want to play with him.
Right.
Yeah, so no. Like, they should have that. That should motivate them to push through this summer. Hopefully everybody had the best offseason they can and come in rocking and rolling, you know what I mean? And win some of the games. Like I always say in football, you got to have the games you win, and some you got to win by luck. Right. So if you want to know which football team that I feel like is going to make it every year, they had them one or two lucky games that they shouldn't have won, but they did.
I had this argument with a buddy of mine. He played also, and he thought I was just trying to say all the right things, so I want to get your take on this.
Uh-huh.
I never went into a game from high school throughout the NFL before the game thinking we were going to lose. And he swore up and down like, man, you had to know. So I want to get your take. Did you ever go into the game thinking, man, we're not
going to lose? No. I can't think that. Yeah. I don't know if that's just the way I've been wired since I've been a kid or whatever, whatnot. Like, some people like to be like, you a sore loser. I think I'm a sore winner. Huh. You know what I mean? So at the same time, because I hate to lose more than I like to win. So I don't never think like, no, I'm finna lose or we don't got a chance. That right there, that grinds me. Like, that get under my skin with somebody even to think that they got the possibility of losing before it's even played.
You know what? This is going to bother you, especially when you talk to your boys. I think this generation, they're a little more realistic. I'm trying to keep it positive.
Yeah.
Because I remember, not to make this about me, but I remember when I was in college, we were about to play Ohio State.
Uh-huh.
And for those who don't know, I went to Rice, and at the time was the smallest D1 school in the nation. It was our first game of the season.
Uh-huh.
So that whole summer, you know, we're breaking our workouts, beat Ohio State. Man, we were so crunk. We were like, man, we about to shock the world.
Right.
They beat us 70-7.
Hey, but they had... Hey, but did y'all make them play, though?
No, we did. I mean, look, I gave Orlando Pace all he could handle that game.
Yeah.
But then on the way back, we were like, oh, okay, that's the difference. But even then, we played LSU 2 weeks later.
Uh-huh.
Like, I would have bet my life we were going to win that game.
Right.
So I'm kind of with you, but I think now, if you ask some of these kids, because we get a chance to talk to a lot of kids,
right,
and I'll pull them aside like, hey, what you thinking about this game? Oh, man, our quarterback trash. We're not going to win. And I'm like,
how do
you going
think
into
that?
The game, but you know, thinking that?
Yeah.
I think they're a little more aware.
Ah.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I think you being nice and aware. You know what I mean? Because it's just hard for me to think like we're not going to win. Like,
I'm with you.
Yeah, like if you're going to beat me, you're going to have to beat me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care what it is. I don't care if we see – who could throw a rock the farthest or closest to a wall? You're going to have to beat me. I don't know if I can even throw a rock close to the wall, but you're going to have to show me that you can beat me. I'm not going to just say, oh, yeah, he's better than me, or no, we don't stand a chance, or no, my teammate ain't good enough. You know what I mean? Because if I would have heard a guy say that, our quarterback, sir, we're not going to beat him, well, what the other 10 people going to be doing?
Come on.
Because we got a chance, and the other 10, they just got to beat their people there. You know what I mean? So it's always a way around to always thinking you know, negative, start thinking some more of the positive thing. And I think that's why a lot of people put a lot of doubt, which brings anxiety to them because they doubt in themselves so much instead of believing in themselves. You know what I mean?
That's
so
strong right there.
Yeah, man, it got to happen, man.
That's laid down on the couch strong right there.
Hey, man, that's going back to my Michigan State psychology class days.
I'm like, look, can we turn the mic off? I got some things I've been going through that I want to tell you about. All right, well, one quarterback that is not trash, emphasis on not, C.J. Stroud. Just because you watch the game differently than a fan, because you and I have the conversations. What did you see out of C.J. Stroud his rookie year?
I seen like a poised quarterback, for one. He's very poised. And what I like about C.J. is, I don't know if too many people recognize it, you know what I mean, but I know you do. I know the guys that played. Is he never put his receivers in harm's way.
Mm.
And you go back and you look at some of the great, the Tom Brady's, the Peyton Manning, you know, the different ones, they never put their receiver to where he going to get smashed. He's taking a receiver where he want to go when he throw the ball. And I think they did a great job. It helped some of the youngest players like Tank Dell and some of those guys. And all, you know, not just them, because he's young, you know what I mean? So, but you could tell he's been working with someone that's been poking him in this game for a minute, the way he throws the ball. And I think that's a huge thing for a quarterback. Because for one, the receiver's got to trust you.
Right.
For two, you got to, I say the receiver got to trust him, he got to trust the receiver. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put this ball where I want you to go. You just got to turn around and find it. Yeah, I know the play make you go 10 and out, but I might throw 10 out and I might throw it behind you because I see him sitting on top of you. So now I'm going to throw it behind you and you're going to turn it all the way around and get that ball. You know what I mean? So it got to be a trust on both angles. And I see like, man, if I didn't just know his age, I would think he was a super vet in this league.
Right.
Yeah.
When you mention that, because that's very perceptive, do you think he's thinking like, okay, if I throw this ball, he's going to get laid out? Or is it more because of the timing, he's getting it out in time?
I think it's more him reading the defense and reading the people. I mean, mm-hmm. I think he does a great job of recognition of the defense and what there really is and knowing exactly where he can go accordingly, whether it's his zone, whether it's man. And, you know, I think that's got a lot to do with the placement also. So if they got two safety highs and he's going somebody coming across the middle with a linebacker sitting in that middle, of course I'm not going to lead you. I'm going to throw it behind you.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? The linebacker might come and hit you, but it ain't going to be as hard as you running into him. You know, and I think he does a great job of recognizing what's going on and putting it like that.
There's always this debate. Now you have Nico Collins, who's coming off a career year. You're getting a healthy Tank Dell back. You signed Diggs. Yeah. when they talk about number one receiver, is that just media talk, or do you feel like the offensive coordinator has to say we have to target this one guy more?
Man, no, I don't. I would hope they don't do that, especially right. with a you know, with a young quarterback or either, you know, because all three guys you just named is exceptional guys. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, the big thing is going to be is, okay, we're going to put that personal side, that personal stuff to the side, and we're going to win. You know what I mean? It ain't about who's the number one, who's this and that, because you're talking about three studs.
Right.
You know what I mean? That can go on any team and possibly be a number one receiver. You know, so, you know, I don't think that's going to play in the player and really affect too much, like, oh, I'm the number one receiver, throw it to me more. No, you got it's the protocol when you're running the offense. And as long as they stick to it, I think everybody will get theirs.
Great stuff there from our guy Andy Kalu and former Texan Robert Smith. We had a chance to catch up with Robert after he was in there with ND. We're just chopping it up. I don't think I'd ever met him before. So it was great to catch up with him. Very, very cool guy and great on the mic. So appreciate Robert Smith. And, of course, our guy, ND Kalu. All right, coming up next, we're going to go around the league. What's happening on a Friday? There's always news on a Friday, that Friday news dump. Are your Texans involved in any of that? I don't think so, but you never know. We'll do that next right here in Texans All Access. We got one final segment of this edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. I am John Harris, your host, and we appreciate you guys being here for All Access, all offseason Texas All Access shows brought to you by Mattress Firm, the official sleep partner of the Houston Texans. Spread the word. You can score bonus savings on better sleep during Mattress Firm's Friends and Family Sale. Hurry in to save up to $700 with your extra discount, plus get a free adjustable base on select beds. Let's get the news around the league. Chargers GM Joe Hortis says, yeah, we're sitting at number 5 in the draft. Now, he's a new GM, came from the Ravens, so they know how to wheel and deal. And Joe said, yeah, you know, you can come to us with fair trades and all, but you better make it attractive for us or we're not moving. I think the Chargers sit in a pretty good spot, to be honest with you. Now, some of that can be short-circuited by what happens at picks 3 and 4. Because if the Patriots don't draft a quarterback, they'll trade to somebody that will draft for a quarterback. And you would imagine that Arizona, if Arizona trades out, it's going to be to somebody for a quarterback. You would think that opens up pick number 5 for the Chargers to either A, move the pick and get a lot in return, or B, draft the best non-quarterback in this draft, whoever they deem that to be an offensive tackle, which there's a lot of talk about, or one of the three receivers that we'd imagine are all going into the top 10. Joe Hortis says, look, if we're going to make a deal, it's got to be one of those, man, this is too good to turn down sort of deals. And teams might have to do that to get to number 5. Now, Arizona could sit tight. New England could sit tight. Arizona could sit tight. Arizona's not drafting a quarterback. So the Chargers are sitting there within the golden ticket. And that is going to be good for them if a team wants to go up and get the fourth best quarterback. If not, well, the Chargers can't find that trade partner. They don't find someone that says, hey, we're going to give you more than a fair trade. We're just going to give you a fair trade. They're going to get multiple calls, I would imagine, to trade that pick. The interesting one would be if the Broncos call the Chargers and say, hey, we want to trade with you. I wonder if they'll deal with them at that point. But Joe Hortus says, yeah, there's certainly it's too good of a deal because of what we're getting back. They have to make it attractive for us to move away from those players, meaning who they could draft at number five. The whole, it's a fair trade, it's a wash, I don't think that's a trade that we're interested in. If we're going to trade away from great players, there has to be a reason in terms of value for us. Certainly, there are going to be more great players in the draft, but it has to make sense to you, and it has to make sense to the team that is wanting to come up. This is going to get interesting in the draft at pick number five. I kind of can't wait to see what ends up happening with that particular portion of the draft, because with three with the Patriots, they could move it, could take a quarterback. Arizona won't take a quarterback, but could take the best non-quarterback on the board. I know they need cornerback, but they definitely need wide receiver, especially after trade Rondale Moore. They don't have a guy than Michael Wilson, so yeah, they've got to definitely get that taken care of. The Detroit Lions have also made a jersey swap. Now, keep in mind, you can once you go with a jersey, you stick with it for 5 years. At a minimum, it's got to be 5 years. That's an NFL rule thing. They got to stick with it for 5 years. The Lions went a little bit back to the future, and I like them. I like what the Lions have done with these uniforms. Like them a lot better than what they had the last few years. And they've added a black uniform that's got a blue, kind of a almost a Panthers-like blue helmet. So I would imagine we'll see the white on white, but that's going to be cool because Detroit's coming here to Houston. But the Lions have new jerseys. The Jets already showed theirs. The Broncos have new jerseys. And, oh, if you were living under a rock and you didn't know, the Texans have their new jerseys coming out. Obviously, there are leaks on helmets and all that kind of stuff. So Tuesday's the day. Mark and I will be out and about that day. We'll be doing the show at the Jersey Uniform Reveal. Looking forward to that. You guys have a tremendous weekend. I appreciate you being with me. Thanks to Mark for being here. OGs, Andy Kalu and Robert Smith, all of you for listening. We'll see you next time, everybody. And as always, go Texans.